You're listening to The Stack, first broadcast on the 28th of March 2015 on Monocle 24.
Award-winning publishing for women, an alternative pop star turned cover girl, a men's mag that continues to tick all the right boxes, plus plenty more insights into the indie sector from China, Germany and the UK, today on The Stack. Today on the program, we review the inspirations and findings of our trusted independent magazine distributor, Steve Watson, and see what the young editor of Women's Title Riposte, Danielle Pender, has been up to since we had her on the show over a year ago. Plus, we catch up with the Gentlewoman's editor, Penny Martin, in Singapore.
There's nothing very last minute about doing a cover. It requires a great deal of organisation. It's very unlucky if you end up with a last minute cover, especially when you're a biannual magazine.
All that and much more besides on this edition of The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis show. Hello and welcome to The Stack with me, Tyler Brulé. Now, let's kick off the show and welcome our guest today. Danielle Pender is the founder and editor of Riposte and curator at KK Outlet, the gallery and communications agency in London. Riposte has grown from strength to strength and is now seen very much as part of the high-quality publishing stable for women. Also with me is Steve Watson. Steve is the founder of the innovative magazine distributor Stack, which you can find at stackmagazines.com, which started 7 years ago in an attempt to help independent publishers find a wider readership. Welcome to both of you. Steve, a regular to this program, of course, and I just wanted to say 7 years on, we're about 8 years on into our little publishing journey. How's it going?
It's going really well, thank you. I've been running it for 7 years. I went full-time pretty much a year ago, and it's really kind
which is always a good indicator that you can give up what was the day job, right?
Yeah, and exactly. Yeah, and I was kind of terrified at the time when I did it, but it's proven to be a good decision.
And that is obviously the fact that you can sustain yourself, but from a reputation point of view as well, do you sort of mark also success just because you feel like you're one of the singular outlets that everyone wants to come to? But what else do you sort of look at as measurement?
Well, that's really nice. Absolutely, yeah. there's a very simple one in terms of subscriber numbers. You know, if I know that I have more subscribers this month than last, I know that things are going in the right direction. But also just generally kind of, you know, like you say, being part of this whole industry, which is so exciting at the moment.
Just, Danielle, just before I come to you, I just want to know, when you look at the world, and I sort of feel like when I travel that there are pockets and corners which are maybe a little bit hungrier for the more obscure, interesting, surprising. Does that play out when you look at the subscriptions that you have?
I'm mainly in the UK. I kind of like have pockets of subscribers in Brazil, for example. And I was really confused about that, and then found out Stack had been on Brazilian TV.
Right.
And that kind of answered to, you know, sort of like, why do we have that many there?
Yeah, and probably also because it is so incredibly expensive to buy magazines in Brazil on the traditional newsstand.
Right.
So maybe clever Brazilians are sort of circumventing taxes, etc. Danielle, I was going to say as well, as I've been traveling, amazing to see your magazine popping up everywhere.
Thank
which
you.
Is which is very, very nice. That it's not just, yeah, of course, it's fine to be well distributed in London, but it's also nice to see it in other corners of the world as well. How long has it been now?
We first launched in November 2013, so we are just putting together our fourth issue at the minute.
And when you look back at sort of the evolution of that, where you started, where the mission is, because I guess in a way it's sort of the luxury when you're not sort of putting out a weekly or a monthly or even a quarterly, you've got that time to sort of sit back, contemplate, etc. But then on the other side, you could say that sometimes when you've got a faster publishing schedule, you've got that sort of tension. So has it sort of moved or evolved as you would have hoped?
Yeah, I think it's always, I'm surprised when we put together an issue, I think, oh, we've got, you know, another 6 months to put together the issue and select people. And we always have a really long list of women that we want to speak to. But then I was just saying to Steve, sometimes it gets closer and closer and people drop out, and then all of a sudden you run a real short time frame to hit deadlines. And so there is sometimes still that tension. And because I still work, this is a sort of side project that I still spend a lot of time
day
on.
Day job, not giving up yet.
Yeah. Yeah, so it kind of, yeah, it's fits and starts. Sometimes it's nice to have that longer period of time, but then, yeah, sometimes it then gets really close to the nail.
You've both brought a great selection of magazines. I sort of feel sort of the past few weeks, we've sort of gone off topic. So I want to let our listeners really sort of dive into some of the titles that you've brought in. Steele, I'll start with you. There's three here. I can also already see that you've duplicated as well, so we can have a big discussion on the titles that you both brought in. And where do you want to start? What do you want to look at first?
Well, should we start with the consensus? We'll start the mag we've both brought.
Yeah, well, okay. Why don't we do that? I'll start reveal what you've brought to the table today. Okay, and it's one that we all love, because they're very nice to us as well.
So the new issue of Gym Class is out. I was talking to Steve about this the other night. He's sold out. So he only printed 200 of this one.
Right.
Deliberately kept things like very limited run. I stuck this up on the Stack Instagram yesterday morning, and there are literally people howling for reprint. You know, kind of, right. You've got to reprint this. We've got to have a copy. Which for me is exactly where you want to be if you're an independent publisher.
Absolutely.
You want to be selling out your run.
Now, I'm going to let either one of you define, for people who are not familiar with Gym Class and have not been able to get their hands on a copy, how would you define the magazine? And also, why did you bring it in today?
It is a magazine about magazines. So Steve is a big fanboy of independent and mainstream publishing. And I brought it in because on the front cover, he has a bold text-based cover, and this statement reads, "Nobody cares about your oh-so-cool, kickstarted, tactile, minimalist, unoriginal magazine. Plus, lots more must-read tough love for indie and mainstream magazine makers."
So when we get into the pages, is this a bit of a manifesto for what he dives into, or...?
Well, I mean, the thing that everyone knows about Gym Class, who loves Gym Class, is that, you know, kind of tongue tends to be firmly in cheek. Mm. He has this fantastic, playful style. But that said, he is making a serious point about the, you know, the independent magazine market is changing so fast, and we're seeing so many new magazines coming out. Actually, somebody does need to say, but hang on, where's the quality? It's not enough just to make something and say, I've made an independent magazine. Mm. You've still got to make something that's really great. And I think it's so important that it's Stephen who said this, because he is, you know, as Daniel was saying, he's a magazine fanboy. This is all coming from the purest and like most positive place, but it's really important it's being said.
I kind of agree and disagree with him. And obviously, like Tyler said before, he says really nice things about us, so I don't want to be mean about it.
But the point you'd like to make, yeah.
But I would like to make the point that I think if this is his sort of rallying cry, it would have been nice to have an article inside which was a bit more of a manifesto, which deals with some of the issues that I think he rightly, you know, there's a huge conversation about it, but he doesn't really delve into that, which I kind of would have liked to have seen.
Mm. And you think, from that perspective, Dan, do you think that's about being more solution driven, or just sort of delivering his, yeah, as you said, his own manifesto? This is what sort of, you know, my roadmap looks like. Or
yeah, I think there's, you know, there was an interesting interview with him on Mag Culture, and there was a piece on It's Nice That about kinfolk. So there's a conversation going on, but it kind of feels like, I don't want to call him the Liz Jones of the publishing world, but there is a little bit of sort of clickbait going on, I kind of think. So yeah, maybe if there was a bit more of a conversation around it, maybe he doesn't have to come up with a solution, because I don't think there is one solution.
Mm. I would agree if he were trying to do volume. So the, like, you know, kind of the clickbaity thing, if he was saying, I want to sell 2,000 of these things, and they're, you know, kind of, that's where it's going. Actually, I think when you hold this up alongside the, you know, kind of Gym Class as it has evolved over the years, like, you know, all those covers that we've had of like men in their pants, just because he kind of likes having men in their pants on the cover, like that, it actually, I think, should be seen with that kind of playful tone to it.
Right.
And so, yes, he's making a serious point, and you're absolutely right. He doesn't get into the nuts and bolts of what does that mean. Mm-hmm. But I actually think, for me, it's enough that he is raising this.
Just raising the issue.
Exactly, yeah.
And, you know, there's always going to be a follow-up issue. So, you know, you've already scripted it for him. You're listening to The Stack here on a Saturday on Monocle 24. We're delving into the world of independent publishing. We don't have any traditional glossies on the table at all. So, if anyone was hoping for a bit of that, this could be the wrong show for you. But nevertheless, we're going to be heading to Singapore after this, taking a very short break. Stay with us.
The brand new M24 iPhone app brings you the full radio offering from Monocle 24. Listen live to our four daily news programmes, or catch the freshest tunes on our playlist. And of course, there's the Time Shift, where you can delve into our show archive and listen at your leisure. all our great magazine programmes, covering everything from international affairs to culture, design to urbanism, food and drink to entrepreneurship. It's all available anytime on the new, free Monocle 24 iPhone app. Monocle, keeping an eye and an ear on the world.
You're back with The Stack here on Monocle 24 with me, Tyler Brulé. The U Symposium, Asia's first magazine event of its kind, took place in Singapore earlier this month with a lineup featuring independent magazine editors from Kinfolk to The Gourmand. Monocle's Jeremy Toh spoke to Fantastic Man's editor-in-chief, Joop van Bennekom, for a sneak preview of its upcoming issue and discuss how the latest issues of The Happy Reader and Kos magazine were put together. Jeremy then spoke to our great friend, the Gentlewoman's editor-in-chief, Penny Martin, on the trials and tribulations of creating her magazine's all-important cover.
We've been thinking a lot of what to do with our anniversary year. The most obvious thing, of course, would be to look back. But we thought, like, what if we look forward? What do we look forward 10 years' time? What will the magazine be? Who would we feature? Who are the Fantastic Men of tomorrow? So in this issue, we have a few editorial features that are focused on the future and what the world could look like in 10 years' time. And we're asking a lot of people what they think should be invented in 10 years' time or what should go. And we also ask ourselves the question how the magazine should look like in 10 years' time. So we changed a few things.
So apart from Fantastic Man, you've taken up several new projects. And I've got a copy of Kos magazine with me.
With Kos, it's very simple. They give us just all the freedom that we need to create almost like an intellectual surrounding, an environment around their collection. So a lot of times we use the inspiration of the collection and make it into a bigger world and share it with people. So in this case, this whole issue is about paper and the love of paper and the tactility of the book and of the paper object. And we interviewed different people that are working in the world of publishing and in printing and in literature and in actually bookseller. And we have different photographers also interpreting the clothes and accessories in a way that's related to the theme.
And besides that, you've just launched the second issue of The Happy Reader. How different is it working on Fantastic Men and The Happy Reader?
It is very different. We also, for The Happy Reader, have hired an external editor, Seb Emina, who's brilliant. So the magazine is two things. It's the first half is a very long Q&A with a person that's actually a reader who uses the inspiration from literature in the work. And the second half of the magazine is about one classic work of literature. And this new issue, it's Kim Gordon, who's been interviewed. And then the second half is about The Book of Tea from 1916, I believe. And what we do in the second half of the magazine is that we explore the book from different angles and write about tea culture. And we write about the layout of tea rooms. We talk about Japanophilia, which is something that's already present in Western culture in the last 200 years, I believe. It's a very sort of an inspiring exploration.
I'm Penny Martin. I'm the editor-in-chief of The Gentlewoman magazine from London.
The latest issue of The Gentlewoman just arrived at newsstands very, very recently. And there's something really, really special about it. It's the very first time that The Gentlewoman has had a full-colour cover. Could you tell us a bit more about that?
Well, we had an inkling that we probably wanted to try a colour cover after issue 10. It felt like the first 10 black and white ones were kind of complete entity. And then when the portraits of Björk came in from Alistair MacLellan, it was clear that in the colour images there was a certain kind of vitality that felt really consistent with the subject. And they just looked really alive and pretty. Of course, it's an experiment. It's not a statement of intent necessarily. We may well have another black and white cover next. It's hard to tell, but it just felt right for this time.
All right, so I want to talk a bit more about Björk. The situation was such that her album leaked several months early.
You're telling me.
I'm just very interested to find out, was Björk always planned to be on the cover of this issue, or was it a very last-minute decision?
There's nothing very last minute about doing a cover. It requires a great deal of organisation. It's very unlucky if you end up with a last minute cover, especially when you're a biannual magazine. When you get it right, the constellation of other subjects should really kind of circle around the central subject of the cover. And if you end up planning it last, somehow everything seems out of kilter, like the kind of universe is off its axis. But I won't say that that cover didn't present me with a few problems because, as you say, we were in production in January when I got a kind of a text that the album had leaked. And of course, the piece was already filed and it was written in the future tense of this album about to be launched. And of course, it broke my heart. You know, I was absolutely terrified what was going to happen. But then we started to think, well, you know, we're going to be one of the few publications anyway writing about her, and also given the opportunity to interview her about what it's like for her exclusive to be blown. So we went back to Björk and we were really pleased that she wanted to come back and comment on what it had been like. And actually she gave us some really interesting perspectives on what it's like to have indeed recorded an album and go through that sort of purgatory period where it's not been launched yet and feel the kind of vulnerability of that. And it was strange to have a kind of parallel experience to that. So it wasn't without difficulties, but actually it gave us a very unique and timely account of what was about to sort of happen in her life. So I'm very pleased as it turned out, but it, you know, gave me a few sleepless nights at the time.
That was The Gentlewoman's editor-in-chief Penny Martin speaking with Monocle's Jeremy Toe. And before that, we had Fantastic Man's editor-in-chief Joop van Bennekom at the U Symposium, the magazine event in Singapore, which I was just, as that was on, I was saying it's great that Singapore is doing something like that. Danielle, do you think that, and it's funny because we're just, of course, talking about, you know, maybe gym class, that, you know, they are sparking a discussion and a debate. So not to put you on the spot, but let's say if you were a host or a moderator looking at the independent publishing sector, what do you think some of the issues from your perspective that really sort of need to be told, shaped, formed, do you think?
I think in a way it's quite interesting that I myself, I'm not from an editorial background, and I think a lot of people who are making magazines aren't necessarily from that traditional editorial background. And in a way, I think that's quite interesting because, you know, the formats can be played around with and they're coming at it from a different angle. But then I know from our first issue, and of some of the magazines that I read, the sort of copy sometimes isn't that great. The flow doesn't sort of flow very well. There isn't that sort of finesse in some of the magazines, which maybe isn't such a big problem. But I think, yeah, just that sort of level of professionalism maybe isn't there in some magazines.
Mm. So what do you make of that? Because I think that is probably one of the, yeah, I guess the discussion points right now is a lot of people said, yes, there's a lot of wonderful soft photography and everyone is shooting food and there are so many kinfolk-esque, gourmand-esque magazines out there. But yeah, when you sort of get down into the columns to read things, etc., they're not quite what they could be. Yet, you know, people say it's just great because people are just buying ink and paper and they're making magazines. And is that enough?
Well, I think it depends completely on the magazine. I think that with Riposte, for example, because of what you do, I absolutely agree. I think it's really important that your copy, that your editorial has to be right up there with the design because that's what the mag's all about. If you look at something like the If You Leave Showcase, which came out, I think, the end of last year, which is like, you know, kind of this is a magazine that's come off the back of a Tumblr, which then sort of spawned a series of gallery shows and then turned something else in it. So this is a mag that's being made by people with, again, no experience of making magazines. But I think that matters less in that case because they're not trying to do something that's a conventional magazine. And so there, actually, it's the power of the idea and for them, the photography that really matters.
I think some of the Kickstarter-funded magazines, they are doing really interesting things. There's People of Print are doing their... they've done something for the next issue where you can customise your own cover, and I think that's quite interesting. But yeah, I think there's always a sort of natural selection. The good ones will rise to the top and the bad ones won't get past first, second issue. And I think that's all
and
right.
That's not unique to independent publishing. Yeah. It was ever thus. You're listening to The Stack on Monocle 24. We're going away for a short break. Stay with us.
Spring is springing and it's time to take a close look at how we present ourselves. Our new style survey sits alluringly in our new April issue and will help guide you to the brands, retailers and designers you need to know to smarten up your act. Here's what our editors have lined up this month.
In culture, we're in Paris with Savoir Faire, a record label and one-stop creative shop for artists, musicians and directors that might just point to the future of the music industry.
In the design section, we cross the Irish Sea to visit the Emerald Isle. There we meet some old greats and new favourites who are trying at long last to put Ireland on the design map.
In the edit section, we climb aboard a seaplane in Sydney for Donna Hayes' last meal, take a pit stop in Pittsburgh for this month's property prospectus, and step out in Somerset with a specialist cane maker.
The April issue of Monocle is on newsstands now, or become a subscriber. Head to monocle.com to join the club.
And you are back with The Stack here on Monocle 24. I was actually going to say, you know, we could have almost made this a bit of an Easter special. Okay, well, there's still one more show before Easter Sunday. But nevertheless, people are going to be heading off around the world come Wednesday, maybe Thursday afternoon. So they were packing off their Easter baskets. Stephen Daniel, what should they, you know, one or two magazines to take away on your long weekend? And we'll start with you, because we've dealt with Gym Class. So there's four titles to get through, but we've got about 8 minutes to do so.
So the other title that I've brought in is A La Champ magazine. The editors are based in London and Tokyo, so it has quite a global feel. I really, really like, in each issue, they have personal stories, which I really love. They're kind of just one page, a sort of insight into the writers. And it's something, they're kind of mini essays, which I really like. And then they also do this Portrait City series, so it's a kind of insight into all these interesting people from around the world that you wouldn't necessarily know about, and I think that I always really like that section.
Steve, are you a fan?
Do you know, I don't really know the magazine that much. I see it around, and for some reason I've never...
Isn't that a challenge in your business, though? Because, you know, you're out there curating magazines. I mean, and it's wonderful that you could sort of admit that you don't really know it, because there's so many things coming your way.
There's tons of stuff. The problem I have with something like A La Champ is because I've seen this around for a long time. If there's never been that moment when I've picked it up, it's sort of, I just sit and go, oh yeah, they've got a new thing out. Let's go. Whereas when I see something new, that's like kind of, I've got to grab this now because I need to know what's happening with
it. But that's why I quite like that magazine, or magazines that are a little bit more established, because it's not just the beauty of the new and they've kind of established themselves and they've gone to, made it a bit more sustainable.
Steve, you're tough,
audience.
No, it's like, because isn't that sort of, you know, as you can't see everything, and sometimes it just might be a really, really good buyer at a newsstand who's somehow has a channel into something that you can't see, right?
Exactly. Right. It's a problem. I'm acknowledging it as
a problem
with myself.
It's a good problem, though. Okay, you've got a magazine, and just funnily enough that we were talking about Singapore, you've got issue one of Lost magazine here. Now, I saw that on, when I was passing through Singapore a couple of weeks ago, there it was on the newsstand, and it's quite a thing of beauty. Tell us about it.
It's a slab of a magazine. It's brilliant. I got really excited when this arrived, because this is the first time that I've seen an independent magazine, and it has a lot of independent magazine vernacular. Like, it has this kind of exposed binding on the side, which is kind of very indie.
Yeah.
Lovely big photography, great paper. When this arrived, it was the first mag that I'd seen that looked like that was clearly addressing itself both to an international audience and to a domestic Chinese audience. And that for me is just so exciting, because it feels like this surely is going to be now. We're going to have this like deluge of magazines. Yeah. And if they keep coming like this, it would be great.
I think also politically interesting, because when I saw it, I said, I picked it up in Singapore, and then it's printed in Shanghai, but it's in Mandarin throughout. And I think it's fascinating because... Also, just, you know, coming from Singapore, which also, as we're saying, it's great they've had a conference there recently, but it's not necessarily the great grounds for, you know, independent voices. And there, you know, there is a small issue of censorship in that market, as there is in China. So to see how it's actually sort of sitting between these two places, how it will evolve, is really exciting.
And I think the fact that it's a travel magazine as well means that you're seeing the world, literally seeing the world, through Chinese eyes. Mm-hmm. And so and you end up getting this incredible insight into the way that the writer thinks of himself as a Chinese person overseas. It's brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, Daniel, over to you, because you've got...
My third title is Protein. They are an East London-based company. They do a bunch of different things, trend forecasting, talks, but they also publish a magazine quarterly. This one is the gender report. So they have a different theme each issue, and it's always in this sort of insert section. This one is talking about the fluidity of gender and the sort of changing roles of gender. Mm. And I just think it's kind of interesting, intelligent, but it's never sort of preachy or ranty. They never pretend to be cleverer than they are. And it's always well balanced with sort of smaller features with longer reads.
Right. Now, for people who are not familiar with it, would you say that Protein sort of has filled in a little bit or has taken some of the territory that was owned by Future Lab and I guess all of the work that they've been doing?
Yeah, definitely. But I think Protein are a bit more consumer front facing. Future Lab are a little bit mysterious and,
right,
you know, not everybody, it's not accessible to everyone. Whereas I think Protein are actively trying to engage with readers and they have events which you can attend and that kind of thing.
Are you a fan? Do you like what they do?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think in particular the event side of things, they've been so smart in just kind of like taking this big old space in Shoreditch,
yeah,
and then letting people come and play. Mm. And, you know, kind of come and give talks or show exhibitions, or they're really putting themselves at the centre of this creative community. Mm.
Do you think that has to be a revenue stream for almost any title these days to do the live?
Yeah, I mean, so I obviously have no idea about the funding of Protein. I'd imagine they probably don't make an awful lot of money off a magazine. I mean, you know, the business is about so much other stuff, but the magazine is this really tangible, an object that shows we're in the middle of this thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, kind of all you brands, come to us, we can hook you up with it.
Mm. Now, there's one title left and we can devote lots of time to it. You've brought in MC1R, and I will let you set it up, but you've got the second edition. Yeah. First question, is this something that you would be able to find via your website?
So I don't sell this on Stack yet. Maybe, yeah. Who knows? I first saw MC1R when I was at the IndieCon Festival in Hamburg last year, and then it was in German. So issue one was in German. MC1R is the gene which gives people red hair. And so this is the magazine for redheads all around the world. That they've now, with issue two, gone to English because they realise there's this tremendous audience all around the world.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, maybe, you know, it was probably a very narrow market only for the northern part of Germany. So if they want to reach the rest of the redheads around the world,
it actually started with the kind of Tristan made this as kind of a bit of a personal project, and then thought, I'll interview some people and maybe print a little magazine for them. And then in that typical magazine way, realised that actually to print 500 copies is not an awful lot more than it costs to print 10 copies.
No, absolutely.
And so he ended up with a print run of a magazine. People got really enthusiastic about it. And he realised he was just sitting on this fantastic idea.
Which is great.
There's two pages dedicated to ginger facts.
Yeah.
Ireland does not have the most gingers. Who knew?
Right. Does it tell us who?
It says...
You might have to
pick
it up and see. give us another fact.
It also, gingers have less hair than everybody else. And also, gingers don't go grey.
Right. Well, there you go. I'm not sure about that. I have an auntie who's got red hair, and I think she does go grey slightly. Oh.
Is she left-handed? It says redheads are more likely to be left-handed.
Oh, interesting. Now that's a fact that I don't know. Excellent, wonderful to have and see both of you, Stephen Watson from Stack Magazines and Danielle Pender from Repos. Which issue of Repos is on newsstand right now?
3, and number 4 is coming out at the end of May.
End of May. Okay, so we've missed the Easter rush. Anyway, great to see both of you. Happy Easter to both
happy
of you,
Easter to you
as well. Our producer today was David Pleasant in absentia. I think he's enjoying a lovely holiday in Thailand. So Claire Urban, not Ginger. Ginger-esque, though. Ginger-esque, maybe. At least the reflection of the turtleneck beyond the glass has been both producing and looking after the sound for today's program. If you have any comments or queries, drop us a note to info@monocle.com. Remember, back next Saturday with a bit of a Canada theme special. We'll see how that comes together when I get to Toronto next week. And of course, you can always listen again at monocle.com or via iTunes. But for now, for me, Tyler Brulé, goodbye.